the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Ben Stone, the bad Quaker? Can you feel it?
I can feel it. I have my hands on the radio, and I can feel the power coming through the airwaves.
Feel the healing power of the fiends by putting your hands on the radio, brothers and sisters. And we are here to drop some mad science. I'm here with Ben Stone, the bad Quaker. Should I even say from badquaker.com? Is that going away, or is that going to be around?
It's going to be around for a few more weeks. We're wrapping up the final episodes of the podcast, getting the last few guests on, and sort of putting the bookends on the on what we've had to say over there. And then it's going to go into archive form, so it'll hopefully it'll be there forever and ever and ever for people to refer to.
So you're putting a nice ribbon on that show pony before you take it out and shoot it?
Yeah.
Do you have someone yet to do the torrenting? Because, you know, I'm the master of that. If you don't have someone willing to do it, just send me some discs, and I'll put it all up for you.
Yeah, Sean has been kind enough. We've actually put together a team.
Well, he's my guy.
They're going to. Yeah, all right. Yeah, he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So we actually have a team we've put together. They're going to take care of all that, get it up in torrents, and do another kind of archiving that I don't fully understand, but I trust Christian, and he's going to take care of it. So we're looking good.
Yeah. We are, the Freedom Fiends are the only show that, every show has a webmaster, and that's me, but we have a torrent master, and that's Sean Duvalli, and he's the guy that puts everything up on the BitTorrents on an RSS, separate RSS feed for the BitTorrents that people can go to the Freedom Fiend site and click on the link that says Torrent Club over on the right and learn how to help be servers for the Freedom Fiends, you know, running torrent servers from your home using your unused computing power while you're asleep or at work and helping keep us drone-proof. And that's important because, you know, one of these days we're going to irk the wrong person and get a drone through the window, get a Hellfire missile shot from a drone through the window. I don't know.
You know, and we've said this too quite a few times, but bears repeating. We're not really doing this just for the moment. In other words, a lot of radio and a lot of podcasts are out there, and the shows are just for the moment. They're reading off the headlines, or they're talking about what evil government did today, or what Obama's up to, or what the, you know, they're talking about things that are happening in this moment right now.
Yeah.
And what we try to do is we want to present something that's going to mean something 10 years or 100 years from now. We're trying to present something that's a little bit beyond just reading the news and complaining about it or commenting on it.
Yep, and that's why Ben and I are doing a 36-part series about Statism Anonymous, which is the 12-step fellowship that we've started that is about getting away from the disease of statism, and we're applying the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 concepts of world service of Alcoholics Anonymous to this 36-part series. And today is step 3 in Statist Anonymous. And what did we say the title of the show was going to be today? The Link Beatty thing?
Wow. You know, I didn't write it down.
Yeah, I'll figure it out. So you've been reading the, Anarchy in the AA.
That's what it was.
Which is actually jumping ahead to the first tradition a bit. But we wanted to explain why people who aren't alcoholics shouldn't think this is square. You know, they should be like, oh, these guys used to talk about liberty and no government thoughts and, you know, how to live free. And now they're talking about AA. No, we're still talking about that stuff. And I actually wrote a book called A User's Manual for the Human Experience that discusses taking the steps of AA and applying them to getting bad people out of your life, which is kind of what the Fellowship Codependence Anonymous does, but it's our thing. My thing is different. And then I took something I've never seen. Like, a lot of people apply the 12 steps of AA to various things other than alcohol. But I took the 12 traditions of AA and applied them to forming groups like ad hoc temporary autonomous zone groups, like work groups, like Derek and I are doing with Fiendphone and things like that. And Ben and I are talking over Fiendphone. We're not talking over Skype. We're talking over the thing that Derek Slopey and I invented called Fiendphone. And you can go to Fiendphone, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com to download it and try the beta version today. It's free. So, I think that there's a lot of issues that people have with AA, and a lot of it comes from, there's a term, it's actually a Herbert Spencer term, I believe. We're a fan of his. There's a quote from him in the AA book, something about, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's something about like the biggest impediment to, you know, people improving their lives is contempt prior to investigation. And contempt prior to investigation is, and I think that may have actually even been misattributed to Herbert Spencer, but you know, the AA book is not a Bible. It's not handed. It's not transcribed from the mouth of God like some people think it is. It's written by men who had ideas going blindly into a forest and really put a lot of other people's experience, strength, and hope into the system of AA and figured out how to do something that had never been done, which was basically how to take do or die alcoholics who were in the process of drinking themselves to death, who'd lost everything, get them to not drink and become useful members of society. And that really had never been done. There's actually the founder of AA was a stockbroker and he had a lot of money and he lost it all and, kept drinking and couldn't stop. And he was actually writing to the early psychiatrist, not Freud, the other guy. What's the other guy's name?
Jung?
Yeah, Carl Jung. He was writing letters to Europe, you know, and getting answers back and forth with Carl Jung, saying like, you know, you're this great psychiatrist. You're one of the fathers of this new type of brain medicine, talk therapy. You know, how do I cure my alcoholism? And Jung wrote him back. Jung was actually a small but important part of the founding of AA, is what I'm saying, is they took things from a lot of different sources and it worked. And what didn't work, they didn't keep doing. What did work, they kept doing. And Jung said that the only time he'd seen alcoholics of Bill Wilson's magnitude recover and stay sober was when they had a spiritual awakening. And he said, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean finding religion, but a spiritual awakening. And AA kind of actually found ways for agnostics to have spiritual awakenings, which is kind of a long and complicated thing that we'll get into a little bit more probably today in step three. But it's kind of interesting to me that they were able to put these things together, one from column A, one from column B, and synthesize this new thing that spread and open source, you know, like literally like they put copyrights and trademarks on the book and on the name so people couldn't come out and say, Alcoholics Anonymous brand whiskey. You know, they were using defensive trademarks and patents, but like all of the literature now is up online. You know, you can buy the books at meetings and in bookstores, but you know, you don't have to. They don't keep it close to the chest. It's not a cult. You know, I actually thought before I went into AA that the 12 steps were revealed after you do each step. Like you do step one and then they'll tell you what step two is. And it's not like that. It's not a secret society. You know, it does have the name Anonymous in it, but it's not a secret society in the same way that secret societies are. And when you walk into a meeting, all the 12 steps are up there on the wall. You know, they're not secret. So you've been reading, Ben, the book, The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is, I think, a much more elegant and evolved book than the AA Big Book, which is just called Alcoholics Anonymous, which is kind of the Bible of AA, which was written in the 30s. And after 20 years of experience and working with a lot of people and getting a lot of people sober and having people stay sober, Bill Wilson, with help from other people, wrote the 12 and 12, as it's colloquially called, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, which I think is an amazing book. And you've been reading it. And what did you say to me about that book?
I was stunned by it. To me, it seems like, well, first off, it's written, I have two objections to it. One is it's written sort of in an outdated language, the language of the 1930s and 40s. He wrote it in 1953. Bill W. wrote it in 1953, but he was an old guy by that time, and he spoke in that weird vernacular of the 30s and 40s. So
yeah,
it kind of has that flavor to it, and that can throw some people off. But it, in another way,
like
it
they kind use, of they gives use the it word, a... He uses the word vainglorious a lot, which is not a word that's used anymore. I like it, though. It's kind of poetic, the way he writes.
Yeah, there's several kind of odd things like that that it kind of feels like you're watching a movie from the late 30s or something. Like, you know, you should expect one of those Hollywood stars from the silver screen to be actually saying the words. But in a way, that kind of it kind of makes it stick with you a little bit better. The other problem with it is some of the stuff, some of the references are outdated. Like there's numbers in reference to how many people have been helped that have been outdated. And I read a thing about it. It said, well, they talked about it like in 1980 or something like that, in 2000, I can't remember when. And they talked about updating it. And they said, you know, let's just leave it just like it is. And because the beauty of having this language, time is, you know, specific to this time frame, it kind of gives it a uniqueness that would be lost if it was rewritten. And I think that was a good choice. But the thing that really struck me about it was that it's everything that we have been talking about in what is loosely called the Liberty Movement. And Michael and I both, for the listeners, Michael and I both don't really like that phrase, but for lack of a better thing to describe this, the Liberty Movement that's been going on for the last few years, what we have been trying to describe and what we have been talking about, so much of it is wrapped up in the 12 steps and 12 traditions.
Yeah.
That you can just see different, you know, you can see flaw. We've talked about, Michael, you and I have talked many times about flaws of directions that certain people are taking. And as you look through this book, you can actually see why they're making those mistakes.
Yeah, but you know,
and how they could correct them.
A good AA sponsor would tell me I shouldn't be taking other people's inventory. I should only be taking my own. That's probably good advice.
Yeah, and that's the thing of it. That's the whole purpose of it, is so that you can look at yourself and check what you yourself are doing.
Yep, we'll be back for more recovery from statism and bad people after this trip to the market. We are not endorsed by Alcoholics Anonymous, but they're open source, man. They let you use their stuff for other things.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set Liberty back 2,500 years.
That's FiendPhone.com. FiendPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Freedom Fiends. Talking about step 3 in Status Anonymous. And that quote about contempt prior to investigation is misattributed in the AA book to Herbert Spencer. It was actually said by William Paley. Are you familiar with him, Ben?
Don't know the name.
English clergyman, Christian apologist, philosopher, and utilitarian. But yeah, I mean, I just say that as proof that, you know, the AA book is not gospel, especially since I don't think they've ever corrected that mistake. And they have come out with different editions. I think they're up to the 4th or 5th edition of the big book. I don't know that they've updated the 12 and 12. The 12 and 12 was a lot. They had a lot more time to put it together. You know, the AA book and the first book, the book Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book, they were kind of grasping at straws when they wrote it, and they didn't even know if it would get published. And you know, they were recently sober alcoholics who tend to argue a lot. And, you know, the 12 and 12 was like 20 years later when it was an established thing. They had their own publishing arm. They knew it was going to be published. They could take their time with it. You know, they didn't have the feeling of like, if we don't get this out now, we'll all die, which is how I generally feel with things. I do. I've talked with Davi Barker on the show about that, about how I like, you know, if I have something I'm mailing to somebody, like I take a walk at night and go stick it in a mailbox. So if I, you know, die in my sleep, it gets to the person, that kind of thing. And the same thing with publishing. And, you know, probably that's probably one reason I push out versions of movies and software quicker than other people would, you know, bugs and all, because we do a lot of bug testing. So we're doing bug testing on the idea of applying the steps of AA to statism, you know, the love of the state that is really the root of all, I'd say the root of all, most of the ills in society, because as Bill Buebert said, you know, it's not question authority, it's question obedience. Because questioning authority, you know, at least the United States government will let you do that all day long. What is it they said? You know, I care not if the people protest as long as they pay their taxes, that old thing. So, yeah. So what is the third step of AA that we're applying to, the third step of Status Anonymous?
So the third step is we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him.
Say it again.
We might want to read the first two.
Yeah, let's read the first two, because really all three of the first steps are really one step broken up into chunks. And it was, you know, I did talk about how AA was adopted from the Washingtonian group, which was not specifically about alcohol. It was a first century Christianity group of people going out and ministering one man to another instead of in a giant church. And they had a 4 or 5 step plan for personal improvement. And the first step was basically turn your will over to God. You know, like, you know, when you join, you get down on your knees and ask God to run your life. And that's a lot for a alcoholic who thinks he knows how to do everything and may not be religious to do. So AA broke it up into steps. So you can kind of look at one, then the other, then the other. So let's read all three of them.
Okay. So the first one is, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable.
All right.
And the second one, number two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
All right.
And we get to today's, which is number three. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him.
Yep. And for those playing the home board game of Creamy Radio Audio, I did just turn up Ben's low end a little bit, which is why he sounds better now. Yeah. So the three steps, man. So, you know, one of the things I hear a lot in AA is if you're not religious and you have problems with this, kind of like turn the group, make the group conscience your higher power. And even people who are agnostic or even people who are religious will have a problem with that. They're like, I'm not, you know, I'm my own man. I'm not letting a bunch of strangers tell me what to do. But the idea is basically to turn, you know, if there's one area of your life where you have problems managing your life, turn that over to the guidance, you know, not necessarily like slavery, but the guidance of people who've been where you're trying to go, you know. And that's beyond, as I said, it's beyond taking advice. It's basically ask 5 or 6 people and, you know, meditate on it or pray on it and think about it. Don't act immediately, but act promptly. Don't put it off and don't act immediately. Act promptly. And find the right thing to do. And that's a really good thing in life. You know, you don't you don't ask a statist how to get away from the state. They'll tell you you need more statism. You know, find people who've been where you're going and are living a life that's happy and not full of worry. And see what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. 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 Now.
And you know, I'm not like being impatient when I hurry you. It's like, you know, this is how I do radio. I'm like, come on, man, let's go.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
I'm going to leave that part in. I had the, I did leave it in. I had the fader up. All right. Freedom Fiends, we're talking about recovery from statism and recovery from bad people. And Ben did want to point out that we have, he and I have taken two different paths in recovery from substance abuse. I went to AA and NA for about 9 years, and I've been sober for coming up on 21 years, clean and sober, as people say who aren't in the program. And Ben, what did you do, and do you still drink?
When I say yes, I do drink, let me just clarify that in the last 30 days, I've had one beer and
moderate.
One evening I had wine. So
yeah, you can drink like a gentleman. I cannot. Yeah. When people say to me, in a bar, so if I'm like in a bar for a reason, I never go to just hang out, but if I'm going to see a band or something, and somebody says, "Hey, let me buy you a drink." I'm like, "Well, only if you're willing to buy the next 70 drinks." That's pretty much how it goes.
But see, that's the way I would be with cocaine if I allowed myself back in like 79 or something. I think it was 1979, I figured out that cocaine and I could not get along because cocaine would always win. And it didn't matter the quantity that I had, and it didn't matter how much was available or how much wasn't available. I would constantly use as much as I could get my hands on. So the only way that I could deal with it, and I was using all kinds of other drugs at the time too, but even in that inebriated state, I realized that cocaine was not something that I could control, and therefore I just could not let it into my repertoire, so to speak.
You couldn't coke like a gentleman. I don't think anybody can.
Exactly.
I really don't think anybody can, but yeah.
It was just too much for me. So I stayed with the things that I could use in a controlled manner. But then once my wife and I got married and we decided to have a family, and, there was two things. First off, we didn't want to be in a state of impairment trying to raise children. We saw that as a really bad thing. And the other aspect was that the lifestyle that we were leading was such that we had to constantly watch behind us for cops. We had to constantly wonder if our house is going to get raided, not only by cops, but by, competitors, let's put it that way, in the black market industry. We had to constantly have that on our minds. And we didn't want to bring up children under those circumstances where we never really knew, if those lights coming up behind us were going to be a cop, or if those lights coming up behind us were going to be an attempted hit on us. We didn't know, and we didn't want that to be the life that our children led. So we consciously just put it down. And it wasn't easy, but it also, I don't think we faced what a lot of people face when they get to the point of where they've hit rock bottom and they have to do something. We never really got to that state, and yet we were able to put it down, fortunately, the way we did. But that's totally different from your experience, right?
Yeah, I went to meetings, and I tried to do it on my own without meetings, and it did not work. I went to AA and NA, and NA is kind of interesting because it was started. I mean, the first 12-step fellowship was AA. They invented it. And then the second 12-step fellowship was Al-Anon, which was basically, the wives of these newly sober men needed something to do. So the AA guys kind of started Al-Anon and said, "Why don't you apply these steps to us?" Although Al-Anon, in my experience and in my wife's experience, and she has talked about this publicly, she's not a member and she's not breaking her anonymity. Her first husband was an alcoholic. And, she separated from him, and then he died years later of liver failure. So she's been through that. But her experience with Al-Anon and my experience with Al-Anon, because I went to Al-Anon when I was in early recovery because I had a band member who was still drinking and using and didn't see, you know, now I would just be like, no, I'm not playing a band with you. But then it was like, the band is important, you know, so, you know, I couldn't just drop it. And they say in AA that, like, the reason, you know, a lot of people have these reasons to not get sober, you know, like, oh, I've got this job or I've got this girlfriend or I've got this mortgage payment. And it's like, you know, sometimes people have to go inpatient to get sober. And sometimes that's a whole racket too, you know, the recovery industrial complex, but it doesn't have to be that expensive and it doesn't have to involve some of the things it involves. But, you know, a lot of people or a lot of people just won't, you know, take the time off on their own even to, you know, get help from friends and get off their drugs and then start going to meetings. And they say in 12-step meetings that the, that if you, you know, all those things you say, I can't get clean because I'll lose those other things. You're going to lose all those things anyway if you keep using. You know, you're going to lose the job. You're going to lose the house. You're going to lose the girlfriend. You're going to lose the wife. So you're going to lose your life. But the third 12-step fellowship, and it started in the 50s but didn't really get strong until the 70s, was Narcotics Anonymous, NA. And the reason NA started was because AA, one of the traditions is that, you know, they have a single purpose and it's to help alcoholics recovery. So when drug addicts saw AA working and went in and tried to get sober in the 50s and 60s, they got thrown out. You know, like the alcoholics were like, oh, our problem is better than your problem. Get out. But fortunately, AA as a fellowship was wise enough to know that they shouldn't, you know, hold intellectual property and use like patent and trademark law, you know, to keep other people from using this program that worked. So they basically said, you have our blessings. Take these 12 steps, change the word alcohol to narcotics and start your own fellowship that has nothing to do with ours, that's self-sustaining. And they did. And the NA literature is very simplified. It doesn't have the problems that you're talking about the AA literature of being flowery. It's really basic writing, and it's actually written to be able, specifically to be able to be read by people who are not terribly literate, because a lot of drug addicts end up dropping out of school. You know, they don't get a lot of education, or they don't, you know, pay attention much, or there's, when you go to an AA meeting and, you know, they read from the book at the beginning and end of a meeting and they pass stuff out for people to read to open and close the meeting. In AA, the people read it a lot better than the people in NA meetings. I've seen a lot of people in NA, for instance, stumble over, who are new to meetings, stumble over pronouncing the word anonymity. It's a big, tough word for people who've, you know, spent their whole life running from the cops. And I blame the government for that. It's not that drug users are stupider than alcoholics. It's that drugs are legal. And, you know, alcoholics get to, you can drink alcohol and go fumble through Yale and become president, you know, but if you get caught with a joint, you never get to do anything.
It's, you know, there's another thing too in reference to prohibition and why prohibition doesn't work in all of this nonsense. If you have, let's say you have somebody who's a freshman in high school, they're in the ninth grade, and they want to experience some kind of a substance that's going to do whatever it is that people need these substances to do or want these substances to do. It's very difficult for a person in the ninth grade, let's say, to get their hands on a bottle of good whiskey. It's yeah, possible. It can be done, but it's kind of tricky. You're going to either have to steal it from a parent or steal it from a store or convince an adult to buy it for you. And it might be easier to get them to buy you beer, but it's going to be tough to get them to buy you real whiskey when you're in the ninth grade.
Yeah.
But you can score a bag of weed anywhere when you're in the ninth grade.
Yep.
And that's the difference between something that's illegal and something that's legal. By making it legal, it's literally harder for the teenager to get a hold of.
Although you're not making a case for legalize it, regulate it, and tax it.
No, not at all.
Because that leads to like, you know, people with cancer getting their homes raided and their door kicked in and guns pointed at their head. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's government interference in the situation in any way only makes the situation worse. It doesn't make the situation better.
Yeah, and people who say that they're small government should realize that you need to be consistent and take that to not only the smallest level, but also to every level, but also to things you don't like. You know, if you're a small government Republican who's running a business – And I've talked to several business owners lately. You know, I call program directors all the time, and they're nickel and diming program directors like out of being able to do radio. It's tough, far tougher than it used to be, you know, for them to survive because the amount of paperwork and taxes and reporting and hourly this and that they have to do, you know, to the point like those people, if you asked them, even if they're liberals, they're probably like, yeah, man, there's too much regulation in my business, you know, and Republicans definitely would say there's too. And, you know, I've talked to a bunch of them and they're like, yeah, there's too much regulation. It's killing small business. But, you know, you got to take that to the limit of like the guy standing down in the park selling bags of weed to other consenting adults. There's nothing wrong with that, man. And you shouldn't cheer when that guy gets his door kicked in. You should be booing it and standing out there taking pictures and tweeting about how horrible the police are. Because also those are the same police that are basically training to kick in your doors and take your guns. And you're not going to have your Ruby Ridge moment because they won't let you. You know, they've got it down to an art. They'll go in at 4 a.m. with a flashbang when you're asleep, or they'll just get you on the way home from the dentist and surround you and then take the keys out of your pocket while you're handcuffed and go to your house. But, you know, you got to take it to things you don't like. And you also have to take it to every level. Like you can't be a small government person and say, we need some taxes and regulation, or we need tariffs to protect America. You know, like, no, none of that, man. You have to be consistent and take it to the smallest level. And if anybody listening is saying, what are they talking about? This is a tangent. I thought they were talking about the 12 steps. Well, duh, we're talking about the 12 steps of Status Anonymous. And this is solidly part of it, man. So, Ben, tell me a little bit more before we go to the break here about why you like this book and why you think that the 12 steps and 12 traditions should be read by anybody interested in liberty, regardless of whether they have a problem with alcohol.
Yeah. So, you know, I've read the 12 steps before, as far as not the book, but just reading the 12 steps that Alcoholics Anonymous always provides. And I've looked at that and I've thought, oh, well, that's interesting. Yeah, that I can see how that applies. And, you know, I'm not opposed to it. Let's put it that way. But it didn't really strike a chord with me until I read this book by Bill W., 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. And what it does, it takes each one of them and then walks you through it, walks you through all the practical outcomings of it. And it really lays it out in such a simple and clear way that it rings true in your heart. And I've said this for a long time. When you read something that really touches deep truth, it rings inside you and you recognize it. You're like, I know that. That's exactly it touches something deep within you that you know is correct.
And you want to spread it to people too, which is why like people who are recently sober in AA often seem like religious nuts to people because they're trying to trumpet it to everybody because they finally found some truth, you know, and they're applying it to alcohol. Like I've actually heard, I said in early AA, everybody needs to be in this program, even people who aren't alcoholics. And I don't know if they need to go to those meetings, but they should read the book. It's good.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Founding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks, you can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends! Talking about the perfect synthesis of anarchy and democracy that is the tradition structure of Alcoholics Anonymous and how to apply it to statism. And if you want to read my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, I'll link it in the show notes. It's free. You can buy a paperback on Amazon, but there's a free audiobook and a free PDF. And I talk about how to apply the traditions to running small businesses or small ad hoc groups. And yeah, AA was pretty much like an open source organization, the way they ran things. You know, every group was autonomous, as long as it didn't harm the fellowship as a whole. You know, you could have a naked AA meeting. You could have a communist AA meeting. I actually used to go to an NA meeting called Atheist Agnostic Anarchist meeting of NA. Although at that meeting, they ended up talking about God so much that it was that kind of atheist, the ones that have resentments about religion that just, you know, they talked about God more than the God AA meetings did. So, but you wanted to talk a little bit, Ben, about the anarchist structure of AA. And you got a quote from the first tradition of the 12 and 12 book.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I'm going to read it here. It says, this is from, like you said, the first tradition. It says, to many minds, all this liberty for the individual spells sheer anarchy. Every newcomer, every friend who looks at AA for the first time is greatly puzzled. They see liberty verging on license, yet they recognize at once that AA has an irresistible strength of purpose and action. How, they ask, can such a crowd of anarchists function at all? How can they possibly place their common welfare first? What in heaven's name holds them together? Man, what a statement.
Yeah, yeah.
What a statement.
And you got to realize, basically, in the 50s, he's writing this, and he is calling himself and his fellow AA members anarchists. You know, he's in the first one, he's kind of being glib. People say, oh, how do you anarchists, survive? They see anarchy, meaning chaos. But then he goes on and uses anarchy correctly. He says, how do, we anarchists get along? And then he goes on later to tell you how. He's calling his organization anarchist. And that was a bold move in the 50s. I mean, that was when they were rounding people up for not, taking a loyalty pledge to America every morning.
And I'd like to add something too about this book. As I was reading through it, I'd get a little bit, and then I'd find it so fascinating that I literally had to stop and start over again because there were so many depths of what I was reading. It very much reminded me, the very first time I read Ludwig von Mises' book, Socialism, I had to just stop and back up and start over again.
Which is an anti-socialist book, to be clear, for those who don't know who Mises is.
And Mises did such a good job at tearing down socialism, but the guy was literally a genius. I mean, he was literally way smarter than almost any of his contemporaries. But my problem with reading Mises is that because he's so smart, it's very difficult to read what he's saying. So it really takes it's tiresome to read it. And yet I compare that to Murray Rothbard, and I really enjoy reading Murray Rothbard. It's really easy for me to read and very fulfilling, and he also is an anarchist. And Murray was able to make things interesting when I was reading it. And now reading this book from Bill W., The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, it's kind of like that perfect balance between Mises and Rothbard in the sense that you're getting real solid meat and potatoes, but you're getting it in these in a real comfortable way of it. The dialogue is like it's a guy talking to you. Some old guy that's, your grandfather's buddy is talking to you. It's in that kind of dialogue.
He was kind of a weirdo rebel, though, too. I mean, there's a picture of him sitting on a motorcycle with his wife in a sidecar, and he has a mohawk in the picture. And that picture, I've been to biker AA meetings, and they usually have that picture of him on the wall.
What time frame would that have been?
1930, late 30s. It was actually before. It was before the stock market crash. When was that? 29.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Because he actually did what would be considered insider trading. Now he got sick of playing the stock game, and he decided to go out and go to factories and meet with the factory people and study them and write reports on them and sell them to stockbrokers. You know, which literally would be considered insider trading now. But yeah, he took LSD too in sobriety.
Wow.
We'll talk about that when we get back on the Freedom Fiends, talking about the 12 steps of Status Anonymous, something Ben and I are forming on the radio. We scrapped the tradition about anonymity at press, radio, and films for this. Press, radio, and films. 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 Press, radio, and films.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite Libair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. I'm your host, Mr. Michael W. Dean. I'm talking to my host for the day and for often, for as long as we can, all the way to Alpha Centauri. Mr. Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, are you there, sir?
I'm here. Thanks for having me on, Michael.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being had. Have you been contacted by the government today?
I have not. I am free of government influence for the day.
Good. So we're talking about the 12 steps of, specifically step 3, of Status Anonymous, which is an organization that Ben and I have formed on the radio. And it's pretty much uses the steps and traditions of AA and applies it to the love of the state. Except I guess we don't have the tradition of anonymity that AA has of that we are anonymous at the level of press, radio, and films. So we'll apply that one when we get there. We'll justify that one when we get there. But we're actually talking a little bit about the brilliance of the AA book, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, and how it can be applied to anything, and how anybody involved in liberty should hear it. Even if you're not an alcoholic, even if you're not someone who's sneaking out to, I have a friend who sent me a picture, who's like a straight up no government guy, who sent me pictures of himself the other day at a Rand Paul rally, like shaking hands with Rand Paul. And I'm like, so does this mean you're calling your liberty sponsor and I'm supposed to talk you out of this? But,
Michael, I was thinking of voting.
Yeah. So we were talking about the how cool this book is, and you know, we don't believe in great manism, but you have recently discovered this book, and you think that Bill W., the guy who wrote it, is pretty cool, don't you? Although, go ahead, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I was just going to agree with that. It really surprises me. I really think anybody who's serious about, you know, wanting freedom and wanting liberty in our lifetime and these different concepts that we talk about so often, if you're really serious about this, man, get a hold of this book. You can get it for free on the internet in PDF version. I think there's probably, you know, it's probably not that hard to come up with a hard cover version.
Oh, if you want a hard copy of the, I can tell you how to get a hard copy of the book. Go to an AA meeting and ask for it. They'll give it to you. Although
it's really worth reading.
That would be kind of fraudulent because you'd have to tell them that you're interested in recovering from alcohol for them to give it to you. Generally what they say is they'll give it to you, but then when you get on your feet, they want you to pay the group back. So, you know, And they'll only do that with two books. They do it with the AA Big Book, and they'll do it with the 12 and 12, because those are the two, like, canons of AA. They have a lot of other books, but they won't give you those free at your first meeting. The one that I really enjoyed, too, is called Pass It On, the Bill W. Story, which is a lot about this guy. Although I think it omits the fact that he had for many decades an affair with his secretary and left more of his over $1 million estate to his secretary and a lot less to his wife, Lois, his long-suffering wife. But, you know, I guess that just kind of proves the guy was not, you know, he was infallible. And people do kind of make a Jesus figure out of him, and you shouldn't do that with anybody, probably not even Jesus. And you're a Christian.
You know, that's a Christian, right?
Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to say that's a good lesson as well for people. You know, it's so often, you mentioned Rand Paul, it's so often that people have a tendency to take these political leaders, or they take some kind of charismatic person on the radio or on the internet or whatever, and they elevate them to a godlike status, and they think, oh, here's the source of my salvation. This guy's, you know, following this great leader is going to get me through this horrible thing of statism or whatever. And really and truly, that's just, it's the wrong direction. It's just substituting one addiction for another. It's not doing what it is that these steps will provide freedom for.
It kind of violates the excellent life advice that I've never heard anywhere better that comes from step three, which is the idea of making a group your higher power. And it's not collectivist. And but it basically means, like, you know, you don't look to the one guy on the internet for your answers. And you don't even look for the people in his group for the answers. You look to a bunch of different people who've been where you're trying to go. You ask them how they're doing it, or you look at how they did it. And then, you know, and I would say also, like, ask someone who's done it really wrong what they did wrong. And, you know, I want to correct something I said last week. I said, like, you know, if you're having, like, marriage problems, don't talk to the Playboy friend of yours that's a player. Only talk to the guy who's been married happily for a bunch of years. Also talk to the Playboy. He might have some advice that'd be useful for you with your wife. But, you know, don't ask the guy who's never been in a long-term relationship how to have a good long-term relationship, is what I'm saying. And the same thing with anything else. Like, if you're trying to figure out how to build societies without the government, you know, read all the great theorists, listen to all the great theorists, but, you know, if someone, like, lives in their mini mansion in Canada and survives on, you know, haranguing $2 donations out of starving college students, I don't think that guy really is the guy to look for on, like, how to run a free market economy, because a free market economy would collapse if everyone was doing that. And that's one of the reasons that the Libertarian Party didn't really ever get anywhere. Is, you know, this is the joke, but it's kind of true, that in the 70s, like, everyone in the Libertarian Party was trying to make a living selling their newsletters to everybody else in the Libertarian Party. You know, not everyone can be an activist full time. And this is something I've said to people who say, you must be an activist. You know, it's like, it takes bakers and mechanics to make a society too. You know, not just the rebels who are the people yelling at the cops and filming it. It takes all kinds.
It really does. Let me, if you don't mind, Michael, let me read that third step again, yeah, since we haven't read it this
hour. I do want to even preface that with, we are not associated with Alcoholics Anonymous. They do good work, but they don't co-sign us, and they don't even know we exist. So I used to be a member. I'm not anymore. But let's read the third step of AA and apply it to statism.
We made a decision to turn... Oops, let me try that again. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. Now, you know, and here's the thing with that, and it goes about, it explains that a lot better in the book, The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're just blindly giving up control of your life. What it means is you're taking your will and you're bringing it into control, because the human will has a tendency to say, I can do this on my own. I don't need help from anybody else. And it kind of makes you want to run out there. I was thinking of it in a sense. My wife and I live in our motorhome, and we travel around the country. We're full-time RVers, and we travel around seeing the sights and going to different places. And one of the things we depend on very highly is a map. We have not only a book of maps, but we look on the internet, and we use maps on the internet, and we plot where we're going, and we figure out where we're at. And in doing that, by depending on something, a thing that other people have already experienced and already put together and mistakes are already made, by depending on that thing, that map, we can have a great level of independence. Our independence is dependent upon that map. We're not, you know, we would live without the map, but certainly we would find it much more difficult to get where we want to go if we just relied on our own will and not on the experiences and the thoughts and the experiences of other people who have already gone through this.
Yeah. And I like your car analogies, and I can extrapolate even further on that. In the last episode, you had something about jacks. You know, you don't want to try to get the car, change the tire without a jack. You know, you have this proven thing, which isn't to say you can't come up with something better than a jack that just, like, you know, you look at it, it lifts your, teleports your car or something. And that's something that if you're a scientist, you might want to work on, but you don't want to work on it when you're broken down on the highway. You want to do the research for the new ways to do things back at home and then try them out in the field. Another thing I would say about, you know, maps are great and you want guidance on how to go from people who've been where you've been before, but you don't want to rely. This is another analogy for not relying on just one source. The map isn't always right. And you want to be able to adjust your path based on new input from people who have currently been where you're trying to go. And an example I would give is, and I think Google has gotten a lot better at this, but in 2004, 2000, I don't remember when it was. I was on tour with my movie DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. And I was in Brooklyn and I printed out my map, you know, to get from where I was showing this film and staying to the highway to get to the next stop in my rental car. And this is before you could get like a GPS unit with your rental car. And so I'd printed out all my maps ahead of time and I was driving to get to the freeway in Brooklyn. And I looked at the map and it said like straight line to the exit to the freeway. And I'm driving on this street and I run into a hospital, like the road just ends and there's a hospital. You know, I mean, the absurdist, taking this to the absurdist would be, no, the map says drive into the hospital, which would probably lead in you being arrested and killed or ending up in a hospital. You know, so I stuck my head out the window and said, hey, do you live around here? And he's like, yeah. And I said, my map says that this goes to the highway. And he's like, oh, they put that hospital up this year. You got to go around, you know, and he gave me directions to get to the highway. So you have to be willing to change the good advice from people who've been where you're going based on new circumstances that come up. And I actually have a Creamy Radio audio realization that I made during this segment. If people notice, like, a lot of times on the Freedom Fiends, you know, the sound is stellar, but a lot of times the co-host is louder than me. And I just realized why that is during the break and adjusted for it. In my headphones, you know, the feed that's going to the radio shows and the, you know, to the network and the feed that's going to my recording of it later for the podcast is exactly the same as what I'm hearing in my headphones. And I'm like, how come I sound balanced with the co-host all the time in my headphones and they always sound louder, you know, when I hear it delayed on the radio or when I play the podcast of it? It's because I am hearing myself and the co-host in the headphones, but I'm also hearing myself through my head, you know, like the vibrations through my head. So I'm louder in my headphones than I really am. So I turn myself down. So I just fixed that and I sound louder to me than Ben, but I think that we're going to sound about the same level. And I've been an audio engineer for like, you know, 30 years and I just figured that out and it's a total bonehead 101 thing, but you know, you live and learn and you adjust as you go.
And that's a Creamy Radio audio tip that we're not charging you one penny for on a special deal today.
You can go to creamyradioaudio.com for more. We'll be back after this trip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Fiend Phone on the Freedom Fiends. Talking to Ben Stoneback Laker about the third step of Status Anonymous. And I do want to point out that Bill W., who wrote this book, The 12 and 12, and who co-founded AA with another guy, did take LSD in sobriety, because in the late 50s, there was talk among psychiatrists that it could be used to treat alcoholism. And he was interested in anything that could treat alcoholism, and he was experimenting with LSD. And this is in his official bio, biography, Bill Wilson, Pass It On, the Bill Wilson story, or the Bill W. story. I'm not making this up. This is something AA admits and talks about. He basically stopped doing it because AA kind of shouted him down. Like, he listened to the group conscience. They were like, "You're just taking dope. Stop taking dope. That's intoxicating. You're not sober anymore." Interesting thing is, though, in early AA and even into the 50s and 60s, people didn't count days and weeks and years and months as much as they do now. Like, for instance, Bill was not told he had to change his sobriety date because he took LSD. And I'm not recommending taking LSD to treat alcoholism. But, you know how the chip thing started, Ben?
No, I don't.
It was in early AA. The other guy he started with was a doctor. And he worked in a hospital, and they used to only take alcoholics who were beyond repair, like who were in the gutter. You know, you had to, basically when AA started, you had to be a low bottom drunk to be allowed in. And they changed that later when they added the traditions. Anybody is welcome, you know, who has a desire to stop drinking now. But, you know, they took people who were really, really bad off and sobered them up, you know, brought them into AA. And there was a nurse who was a nun at that hospital that used to give people Catholic, you know, the little medals. Like, I don't know if it was St. Christopher. Who's the patron saint of lost causes? I think that's the one. Is it St. Christopher?
I'm not sure.
I don't remember. But she'd give them, you know, like when they had one day sober, she'd give them this little medallion. And that turned into the poker chip thing where they give you the, you know, 30-day and 1 year and 6 month chips and stuff. But yeah, it wasn't that big of a thing back then. And it was more about one day at a time, you know. And if somebody went out and drank for a day and came back right away, they didn't even say they'd, you know, they call it a slip, not a relapse, which could be justifying with words. But so we want to talk a little bit about these two pictures. I was confusing two pictures of Bill W. The one of him on the motorcycle with his hard car with his wife, where he looks really hip, and it's from the 20s. And then one of him in the 40s where he's older and has been sober for a long time, and he's sitting by a coffee pot, kind of patting the coffee pot, and has a mohawk. And I'm going to use these two in the show notes. Unless I get lawyer letters telling me not to, I will remove them. But what did you say about these two pictures, Ben?
Well, you know, actually, looking at those pictures of him, he reminds me a lot of my some of the old family pictures that I have from some of my family members from back in Appalachia. My family, two sides, my mother's side, her family has a very strong tradition of alcoholism. And I'm talking about, you know, death at an early age. It really is crushing in that family. And my dad's side of the family, it can take it or leave it. It's very much, you know, they would, some used alcohol, some didn't. And it wasn't really a big life-changing thing in that side of the family. Kind of supports that idea. I don't know if it's been proven that alcoholism is genetic or not.
There is a lot of genetic predisposition to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, from what I've seen there,
I mean,
there's
there's other factors though. In a family of two parents and four kids, I was the only alcoholic, you know?
Yeah.
But they all had other problems too. So it came out in other directions, I think.
But those pictures of Bill really look like some of the pictures of my mother's family that spent many, many hard years in alcoholism, and it took them right down into the gutter, and they really hit rock bottom before it killed them or before they had to do something about it. And you can see the age and you can see the weathering on those pictures of Bill that it really took him down.
Well, he was sober, you know, 10 years at that point. But this is kind of interesting, too. He didn't have a job in AA, and people have joked that he was the first program vulture, which is a program vulture is somebody who lives off of the kindness of people in AA, you know, like who never gets a job and just couch surfs. He literally did that. You know, it's kind of the equivalent of like a libertarian welfare queen. You know, he was just making it his living. But he was, you know, if anyone deserved it, he did, because he was kind of changing the world. And then eventually, like, they figured out a way for him to get, you know, AA in general, like not just him, figured out a way for him to get royalties from the books he wrote, which is why he died a millionaire and had a lot of money to leave his mistress and a little bit to leave his wife. So he was not perfect, man. We'll be back after this trip to the market. If you meet the Buddha in the
You're
road,
listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
So, Ben, take this whole segment. I'll try to sit on my tongue and shut up. All right, go ahead, man. Preach it, Brother Ben. Preach it, Brother Ben. Talk about the third step of Status Anonymous and the corollaries between recovery from alcoholism and recovery from other things, please.
And we do want to give our disclaimer that Barack Obama is a statist and a liar and a socialist and his feet stink.
Yeah, we try to say that at least once a show in case people wonder where we're coming from.
So, you know, I say this all the time, and some of the people who have listened to me a lot probably get tired of hearing me say this, but I want to differentiate between some terminology, and we're kind of stuck in the English language. We're kind of stuck with what it can and can't do. So there's these two words. One is government and the other is state. And I have these two different concepts in my mind, and lacking any better way to describe them, I have appropriated these two words to describe these two different concepts. So I want the listener to think of the government as being the people who are employed by the government. They get a government check. Maybe they wear a uniform. Maybe they wear a robe and sit on a bench. And maybe they have a fancy title. Maybe they're a judge. Maybe they're a congressman. Maybe they're a cop. Maybe they're just a bureaucrat. Maybe they sit in endless halls of cubicles and answer questions or shuffle paper. But they are the government. All of those people and the cars they drive and the statues they build and the buildings that they erect, that's all the government. But above and beyond all of that, there's this other thing, and it exists only in the minds of humans. And I refer to that as the state. It is that condition. It is the condition in your mind that causes you to think that all of that government stuff is legitimate and necessary. And so the word state itself kind of means what condition is it in? Like, what state is this in? What condition is it in? So I have appropriated that word, the state, to describe this condition of the mind that we get into when we think that all of the nonsense that government produces and all that they do and all that they oppress and everything involved with government is somehow justified, legitimate, required, necessary.
And everything and under the sun.
It's all in tune.
I like to propose alternative conspiracy theories I don't believe. I wonder if the idea of, you know, English first, make English the national language, speak English or die, like that thing in America, which is kind of interesting because it's people who are like proud and often talk about the American Revolution, and they're like saying we must speak the language of the red coats, basically, you know. But I wonder if that's because they don't want us speaking other languages that may have these nuances that are lost in English. Because, you know, I know, like, for instance, Russian has a bunch of different words for different types of tyrants, and there's not that many in English. And, you know, like in the book 1984, like the language is dumbed down to the point where, like, there isn't even a word to express the idea of, like, discontent with your government, and that's by plan. I wonder if the people who are in power, the puppet string pullers who don't care if it's Barack Obama or George Bush in office because they own both of them, I wonder if those people are behind the English first thing because they don't want Americans enjoying the nuance of other languages that may make it easier to seek freedom.
Well, whether by design or by default, the English language as Americans use it is certainly getting harder and harder to communicate complex thoughts with.
I thought you were going to paraphrase Spooner. Either by design or, yeah, it has not been able to prevent the dumbening of America, the idiocracy of America. Yeah. All right, go on.
So I wanted to draw a parallel between faith in government or faith in the state, really, and addiction. So I wanted to point out some things that alcohol does. Why is alcohol appealing to the alcoholic? Well, alcohol kills the pain of life by stupefying the brain, and it makes us forget our troubles. It allows a little vacation from the work of thinking about our situation. It allows the mind to relax, and it allows the mind's eye to stop seeing that thing that we don't want to see. Alcohol is kind of like sleep. Sometimes the brain just needs to stop thinking for a while, and alcohol can provide that. Now, faith in the state serves a very similar function as alcohol. It turns the brain off so you don't have to think about the situation that we're all in together. So you say, well, who will provide me with safe streets, protect me from strangers? Who will make the trains and the planes arrive on time? Who's going to feed the poor? Who's going to take care of the elderly? Or who's going to take care of me when I get old? All these things roll through our minds. Who's going to punish the evil? What about those evil men who walk among us? Who can we trust to punish those guys, to catch them, to stop them? And who's going to control the economy? And who's going to keep those evil foreigners away and protect my culture and my heritage? But we don't have to think about these things. I don't have to think about them. All I need to do is just down on a big, tall, cool glass of faith in the state. And my mind, it's relieved of this burden, and I don't have to think about it. My mind can just stumble into bliss, and I can fall asleep as I go about my daily routine. My brain can just leave that all into the hands of great men in government. They'll take care of it. They'll fix the roads. They'll keep me safe from the dirty foreigners. They'll do all those things. And in that sense, faith in the state is exactly like an addiction to alcohol. It provides the same numbing effect to allow us to slumber into this state of bliss where we don't have to think about things. And so we have also, there's a parallel between embracing a higher power and the freedom that we talk about here on the Freedom Fiends. You know, freedom is a thing that is almost so elusive that we can't prove it really exists. It's out there. We can hope for it. We can think about it. But it's really hard to nail it down and put a description exactly what it is that freedom is. And theology is kind of like that. You know, it's kind of, I mean, anybody can just come up with a hard set of rules and say God is like A, B, C, and D. But really, how valid is that? We don't have any way of testing it. So in a sense, we're kind of presenting freedom as sort of a greater thing that's bigger than the individual that we can embrace as a common goal that we can look towards to get us out of this situation of being dependent on government and being dependent on our faith in the state.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one of the things that is from this book, The 12 Steps and the 12 Traditions, and I want to read the step that we're on right now in our study of this. We're at...
it's a study group. We're a study group for Status yeah. Anonymous.
So step three is, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. And so this is not to an individual human. It's not to some great leader. It's not to some wise sage that has all the answers, that we can sit at his feet as he crosses his legs and touches his fingers together and brings wisdom to us. And it's not a dynamic personality that you know, that we hear and we think, oh, that guy's got all the answers. That's not that greater power. But we do have to sort of release our own individual, the independence that we all desire. Everybody who has a tendency to lean towards liberty has a certain streak of independence. They want to maybe grow their own stuff, or they don't want to live by somebody else's rules. They want to make up their own rules. But the problem is, the government provides sort of a false sense of this. We don't have to worry about all those things. We can be independent as long as we trust the government to provide us all these safe measures so we don't have to think about those things. So it provides a false sense of independence. But as we're talking about this, and as we embrace these concepts that we're talking about with AA, what we find is that there's a way that you can have dependence upon the desire for freedom, and you can have an interdependence within this organization, within groups, and by talking to individuals like we've talked about, sort of our liberty sponsors that Michael and I have talked about, we can, by allowing a certain amount of dependence upon them, knowing that they've been through certain things and we can learn from their lessons, whether we're talking about reading Rothbard or reading some other author that's written about this or that, we can allow a certain dependence on those, and a truer independence comes from that. So again, this is going back to relying on a map rather than, you know, a dead reckoning trying to get across the countryside without a map, or relying on a jack rather than relying on your own ability to lift a car to change a tire. We can find independence through a certain level of voluntary dependence upon a situation. And unlike the state, it is a voluntary dependence. With the state, the government wants to force you to be dependent on the state. But with this, we're talking about freedom, and we can choose to be dependent so that we have our independence. Now, I want to quote from this book, The 12 Steps and the 12 Traditions, in reference to this third step. The book says, the more we become willing to depend on a higher power, the more independent we actually are. And in this book, it kind of uses the example of electricity. And the author sort of says, he goes through a couple scenarios about depending on electricity and having independence due to that. Now, my thought on that was that, yes, we are largely dependent on electricity, even though very few people actually understand what electricity is or how it works. If you talk to the average person, electricity is almost like magic to them. They have no clue as to how it really works. And yet, in a sense, they have faith in it. All they have to do is flip this switch or plug in this plug, and it works. They don't have to understand every aspect of it. And remember this, as we're dependent upon electricity, we become independent in many other ways. So, for example, we don't have to understand electricity to understand that it keeps us from having to, say, chop a bunch of wood to heat our homes with. Or we don't have to understand about electricity to understand that we no longer have to boil whales to get lamp oil to light our homes at night. And yeah, because of our dependence upon electricity, we actually have a much greater amount of independence. And that's kind of what we're talking about here. Did you have something there, Michael?
No, we're about to go to the break. It was you dropped some mad science there. I was going to talk about how you've been my Liberty sponsor and continue to be. And that's one reason, you know, like all the phone calls that we've had have brought me to where I am, far more than listening to a lot of your shows, which I've listened to a lot of too. But like the one man speaking to another. And that's one reason I'm interested in getting a lot of you on tape, is to distribute that to the world throughout the distance and throughout the distance of time into the future till when we're not even here. We'll be back with more after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Ben Stone. I'm Michael Dean. I'm talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, my Liberty sponsor. One of them. Nima Vidotti's one. I've got a bunch of them. My wife is one. She brought me part of the way, too. So, Ben, you had one more thing to add before we just make fun of the state. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the first two steps that we've talked about are about reflection. It's being honest with yourself and looking at your situation honestly and reflecting upon the situation that you face. They don't really require action, only reflection and honesty. But the third step that we're talking about today requires action. And that's the thing. As you go through the 12 steps, step number three is the step that requires you to step up to the bat and actually do something. And, you know, it says in the book here that if you haven't really embraced the third step, the other nine steps are not going to work for you. And that's the really critical thing that I wanted to get in there before we ended up here.
Yeah, you're building a foundation. I mean, I've heard, you know, that, you know, starting, I mean, I've actually heard people start with, you know, the ninth step, like making amends to people. That's like building the roof on a house before you've built the foundation, really, because each one of these, it's not a secret society. You don't have to know one before they tell you the next one, but you have to really do one before you can really do the next one properly. Because if you, for instance, if you jump ahead to making amends to people before you've done the background work of the steps before that, you are likely to make, it says made amends to people except when to do so would injure them or others. You're likely to make amends to people in ways that would injure them. You know, before you've got the kindergarten through 12, you don't jump to grad school.
Yeah, there's actually a reason why they're in the order that they're in.
Yep.
And one of the other things I wanted to quote from the book too, it says, our whole trouble had been the misuse of willpower. We had tried to bombard our problems with it instead of attempting to bring it into agreement with God's intention for us.
Yeah, it's life is a big, and we'll get into this when we get into some of the other traditions about making a list, making lists. That's a bunch of steps. But when we talk about the seven deadly sins, which is an analogy that he uses in there quite well, you know, basically the idea that like, every human malady, you know, whether it's lust, greed, or, you know, anger, or whatever, is an exaggeration, like an obsessive usage of a natural impulse. You know, like you need to eat, But too much eating is gluttony. You need to, you know, have love and procreate, but too much of that is lust, you know, to the point where you're obsessed with it and it takes over your life. You know, wanting to take care of yourself and your family is good. Too much of it becomes greed and that destroys people. So, you know, you kind of have to find balance in a lot of things. And really there's, I don't think there's, it's a very, almost nihilistic program in that they're like, it doesn't have an absolute of like, this is sin. It's more like find the right degree in your life where it's not sin. You know, it's kind of like a nihilistic Christianity, if that's a thing. I don't even know. And you don't have to be Christian to be in AA or Status Anonymous. So I want to take the last few seconds here and talk about ways that the state and statism is like drug addiction and drugs and, you know, hard drugs. Okay. Denial. People are in denial when they're drug addicts, when they're lying in the gutter, dying of alcoholism or drugs with a needle in their arm, you know, begging for change with sores all over their bodies. They still think they're doing okay, and they don't want to get help usually. That's how people are about the state. Like, no matter how bad things are, people wave the flags, they vote, they say, yay, the police are protecting us, the military are protecting us, you know, when really, like, there's nothing wrong with self-defense, but most of what those organizations do is not self-defense, and you don't have a choice, you can't opt out of it. Another way they're similar is too much is never enough. You know, if you're a heroin addict or an alcoholic, you will drink and shoot drugs till you die. Like, you will never have an amount where you'll say, all right, this is good, I don't need to do more, you know? And it's the same with like government spending. Like, no matter how much money they have and how in debt they are, they need more. They always need more. You got one, Ben?
Yeah, you know, human sacrifice, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever, you will sacrifice your family, the people you love the most, in order to have that thing. And the government is exactly like that. You'll actually send your sons and daughters out to die for that thing you believe in.
And you cheer when it happens. I mean, I don't say you cheer when it happens, but, you know, when the cops kill some drug dealer, people cheer it too, whether it's civilian or military. And thank you for your service, Ben. It's been a great show. And this is part three of our 36-part series on the steps, traditions, and concepts of world service of Status Anonymous. Thanks, Ben, my Liberty sponsor.
Thank you, Michael.
Worms.
Worms.